Right. You'd just like to say your name and when and where you were born.
My name's Dave Shackleton. I was born in Leeds in 1962.
Right. And when did you come to Burnham Banks first?
In 1984.
You said the date just now.
The 1st of April.
1984.
Yes.
And why did you come?
I came as a volunteer to work on the Eagle Protection Scheme, as it was then.
Mm. Can you just tell me a bit about that?
Yes. Well, the eagles first nested in 1969. And there was a protection scheme running from 1970. I think it was jointly run by the RSPB from Leighton Moss and the Nature Conservancy Council at that time. And there was a team of volunteer and paid staff, mostly paid I think, who used to stay originally at the hotel and then in a caravan below the dam in Burnham Banks, as far as I'm aware. And normally it would be four paid staff per year. I think that continued until around about the late 70s when we moved into one of the buildings.
How did you get permission for that? Did you have to consult Northwest Water as it was then?
I don't really know, because that would be something that was done at a much higher level, but I would imagine that by that time we built up quite a relationship with the local people on the ground, and also we were talking to them about the possibility of the area becoming a reserve by that time as well, and we rented number 64 Burnham Banks. I think we may have been in the old offices prior to that. I'm not sure what number that would have been. It was at the entrance to the depot.
That's opposite the stone building.
No, that was actually part of the depot buildings. So the houses opposite the entrance there, one of them had an old red cedar outside it. That was called the old offices, I believe. And I think we were in there for 1 or 2 years as well.
Any idea what the rent would have been in those days?
Absolutely no idea.
And what was the house like? What can you remember about the house when you first went in?
Well, when I first went to 64, it was pretty basic. There were no beds, just mattresses on the floor. And because we worked a sort of shift system on the Eagles, sleeping up overnight, you didn't have your own mattress, you just swapped them round as they became available. Mm-hmm. Very, very basic. There was no heating except an open fire.
That would be the original open fire, would it? In some of the houses there was a range.
Oh no, there was no range in that one. There were actually fireplaces in the bedrooms of all of them, but the only one by that time that we worked was the living room. And we burnt wood that we scavenged in the vicinity, basically. Yeah.
What about the rest of the house? Was there a bathroom and kitchen?
Yeah, there was a bathroom, three bedrooms.
Kitchen?
Kitchen, a little sort of utility-type storage place next to the toilet out in the back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was nowhere, in 64, there was nowhere to park a car, really. We used to cram one outside the front of the track going up on the fell, but we had very little parking space. But in those days, it wasn't an RSPB reserve at that time, so it was purely protection of the eagles. So it was running from last week in March through to the end of July, and there were I think there were three paid staff by then, and up to three volunteers a week coming from all over the country.
And just to finish off the house, what was it like being in? Was it cold?
It was cold.
Yes.
When I arrived, it was very cold, but 1984 was an extremely hot summer, and it became very hot. And I learnt subsequently when we were in there all year round, they were very cold in the winter and very hot in the summer. Very high ceilings.
Yes.
So that the heat escaped quite quickly in the winter. And from what I remember, 64 wasn't in particularly good condition. Some of the cladding was falling off the outside at that time, and you could see that the walls were bowed under the weight of the ceiling by then. Mm. You could look down the building edge and think, blimey. And the door frames didn't fit. They'd all bowed as well.
Mm. But had it been empty for a while, or was there someone in before you?
I don't honestly know. When we took it over, I'm not sure what year we actually took 64 over. Dave Walker might be able to tell you that. I don't know whether it had been occupied before.
And then after that, moved?
Around about 1987, I think, we moved into number 62. We were never in 63. That was always empty, I think. Which is just an identical building at that time. And then we slowly took over 61 as well.
How did that come about?
Well, it was unoccupied, and we had a lot of volunteers. And the Water Authority let us use that one as well. Mm. And I can't remember what year it was, but they replaced all the windows in the front. around about 1990, I think. It became an RSPB reserve in the spring of 1988, and the whole operation became much on a much grander scale then. We had a permanent member of staff here all year round, plus three summer contract wardens. We also had many more volunteers, not just working on the Eagles, but also another on survey work and management. So at any one time in 61 and 62, there might have been 10 to 15 people staying when it was very busy. So it was quite cramped. and again, very basic, just the heaters in the living rooms, mm-hmm. or the open fires.
So yeah. Was that house in a similar condition?
No, actually, 62 was in quite good condition, and 61 had been lived in until quite recently by Raymond Crabtree, mm-hmm. who then moved into the new house next door, mm-hmm. up the hill. So yeah, they were in a lot better condition than 64 was. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Had a lot been done to them, do you think? Improvements since the early days?
No, I don't think so. The ceilings hadn't been lowered like they had in some of them. I think they'd just been looked after better by the people who'd lived in them. I can't think that there was any... The kitchen was fairly modernised in 62 from what I remember.
Modern fire surrounds and...
No, I would say they were perhaps in 61. 62, I would say, probably had the original fire surrounding it. Mm. 61.
What was that probably, like, the original?
It was just like tiles, browny, buffy, stained tiles, from what I remember, yeah. Mm. Mm. Yeah.
And there's a tree nursery, isn't there? When did that start?
We established a tree nursery around about 1990. When we took it over, it was full of Christmas trees that were only a couple of years old, really. And over the next 3 or 4 years, we eventually got rid of all those. We ploughed it and made raised beds in it. Prior to that, it had been a paddock for a horse, which had been owned by Barbara Harrison, the wife of the previous reservoir keeper. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I think it had been tennis courts. I'm not sure. Other people, Sylvia would probably be able to tell you that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's quite... The tree nursery has produced a lot of trees over the years for the surrounding area, mostly oak trees, a few junipers now. And probably half our volunteer time is spent in the tree nursery still, although we're not actually living in the village anymore. And that's on obviously the land is owned by United Utilities, we work in partnership with them now, and it's a sort of symbiotic relationship, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also we had a workshop in the barn, which is about to be Thornthwaite Mill, and then we moved the workshop into one of the old buildings in the depot. That would have been about 10 years ago now. Mm. So we've got a workshop down there as well.
Doing what?
Well, we store some equipment there, but all the odd jobs are done there, like any woodworking type things, that sort of thing. It's all done down there. Mm. Yeah. But we don't have electricity. So there's no power source or anything like that. Mm.
Yeah. Mm. So has there always been a good relationship with the Water Authority?
Yeah, I think so. When we first came, it was Northwest Water. Well, when I first came, it was Northwest Water.
Yeah.
Now UU. But yes, we've always had a good relationship with them, yeah. And now they actually pay the wages of the Eagle Warden through the summer, and the suppliers with a lot of the materials that we use for fencing and things like that, where we've enclosed areas on the estate. And in return, we deliver some of their biodiversity objectives. I think that's the current speak, isn't it? It covers everything.
So when you first came here, can you remember how many people were living permanently in the village, roughly?
Oh gosh.
Or how many houses were occupied?
Well, there was the Harrisons, who was the reservoir keeper, and there was Raymond, the assistant. There was George and Sylvia, Hindmarsh, Norman Buckle and family, Keith and Jean Harrison on the end. I think George and Sylvia's son was still in the village, and Judy, whose surname I don't know, she was in the village as well, and Mad Scott and Nana Hindmarsh. There may have been, oh, and old Mrs. Walker and Norm Buckle. Sorry, Jack Buckle. So in fact they were probably almost all occupied, apart from the one opposite the entrance to the depot, the old offices, I think. And 63 wasn't occupied next door to us. The rest of them may well have all been occupied at that time.
Do you remember what things like public transport were like, or mobile shops?
From what I remember, there's always been a mobile butcher's.
Yes.
And I think there was a mobile baker's, and there was an ice cream van came around in the summer.
Yeah.
The mobile library used to come in the village. Public transport, I can't really remember, because I never really used it. For as long as I can remember, it's been sort of like the school bus plus two buses on a Tuesday and Saturday. That's all I can really remember.
What about the environment at Burnbanks when you came? I mean, 20 years ago, obviously there's some mature woodland, isn't there?
Yeah.
But what was it like then? Any different?
It hasn't changed an awful lot. Well, not... It has in some ways, like the woodland, the coniferous woodland below the dam has been thinned. That happened about 5 years ago. A lot of the birch scrub, the regeneration that occurred after the work on the pump station, has matured. There's a lot of sort of mature birch in the last 20 years, I guess.
That's sort of in between the dam and the
pump station.
The main road, basically.
Well, there's not really, because there's bluebell wood in between, which hasn't changed an awful lot. That's a mature oak wood, and that hasn't really changed. Between the depot, the pump station and the dam, really, that area. The other thing that's changed, I guess, that has grown up a lot. There was a sort of a, what we call a poor fen around the pool below the dam. That has scrubbed over a lot with alder and willow. And we've also put in some enclosures below the dam to encourage woodland regeneration. Some conifers have come out in various places. And the old tip, which is now sort of behind the fish farm, was covered in conifers. And that, they were all felled. We burnt them and planted trees on those.
Had someone planted those, or were they self-seeded?
The conifers? No idea. I would guess they were planted. I would think they would have been, yeah. I think there was a lot of amenity type planting went on after the dam was built, I presume so anyway. Of non-native species as well as... So some of the woodland composition has changed. Of course, just recently the big 21 big conifer trees came out from behind the oaks. That was just this last couple of months. They were a huge feature. I noticed I was up on the hill today looking this way, and the panorama of the village has changed totally because of the removal of those trees. and a few other trees have been taken out recently because of the development that's going on now. The other big thing, I guess, that has happened, well, there's the fish farm, the arrival of the fish farm, which has increased a lot of the traffic through the village.
Do you remember when that was? Roughly?
Roughly 10 years ago, something like that. Very roughly that. around about privatisation time, I think. So that's there's a lot more traffic goes down there, and also that area below the dam obviously is much more disturbed than it ever once was. It was a real wildlife haven, one of the few, or the least disturbed places in the whole Lake District, probably, because it was all strictly private. but with the fish farm coming and various other developments, there's a bit more activity under there now.
Was there anything unique there in the way of wildlife, or just the combination of factors?
I wouldn't say there was anything hugely unique. There's a nice alder dominated woodland community, which is quite unusual in the Lake District, really. Sort of wet woodlandy bit. There's some very old oaks with some nice sort of lichen epiphyte type communities on the trees. And there's kingfishers don't breed there, but they winter there and things.
Is there a return of some fish to the river as well? But people elsewhere talk about that.
Return
of
fish.
Some of the other becks.
Well, they've been places like Heltondale and Cordell. They've been putting, well, in Heltondale there's a fish ladder type thing gone in. I think United Utilities are always striving to improve water quality, which is always going to benefit fish and other wildlife. Really, I don't know about the wild fish population. Things like the migratory fish, like salmon, can no longer get into Haweswater and things like that. So I'm not really au fait with the fish communities in the River Lowther, I'm afraid. There are periodic floods. I've got photographs somewhere of some quite bad floods under the dam. The whole lot's just a lake and things like that.
Oh, you remember when that was?
No, but I'll have it on the slides. Well, the other thing I just remembered that we used to have to do when new volunteers arrived, there was always the suspicion that there was a possibility that the dam could be a terrorist target, particularly when the troubles in Northern Ireland were at their height. And any new volunteers we had to take down to introduce to the reservoir keeper or his assistant, and they were given a briefing. And we all had permits in those days. And we weren't allowed between the depot and the dam. It was strictly, we weren't even allowed to go there when I first came here. We were allowed to use the concrete road, and that's really what the permits were for, but that was it.
It's interesting that it's more relaxed now when terrorism's on the agenda.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yes, it is really, isn't it?
What about, what happens, or what did happen to the sewage from the various houses? There's
this little treatment works by the depot. Yeah, just behind.
That's the original treatment works? Or?
I would assume so, yeah. It's behind the row of garages. It's just been ripped out.
Yes. So we're putting in a new one somewhere around.
Yeah, I think it's roughly the same place, by the way. It's a septic tank, I think.
Well, Sylvia said she thought it might be a reed bed.
Oh.
I don't know.
A filtration thing, I don't know. I don't know, actually. You'd have to talk to Nick, the site manager up there. He'd be quite useful, actually, because he knows where all the waterworks are and things. The underground stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Well, someone may have done that.
Yeah.
The chance that Burn Banks as a village, as a community, might carry on?
It's difficult to know how much of a community it'll be with, 12 houses? 15, 20 occupants, I don't know. Mm. But, I think so, yeah.
I think that's it. Is there anything else we can think of? Obviously, you think it would be a nice place to live?
Yes. Well, I've lived in it for probably about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
I lived in the actual visit, and I've worked here since then, so it's a lovely place to live, very peaceful place. Obviously it's a bit isolated from Penrith, and it's a bit of a drive out on that road, and presumably there'll be increased traffic. But that's just one of those things. I was going to say, are you aware of the gravestones above the dam? A couple of lads who drowned in the lake. If you go above the dam I'm not sure if you can actually get into it, but you can see, at the moment you see them from the other side of the road, two stones, the gravestones, two lads are drowned in the, and I think they may have been from the village.
Mm-hmm.
That's going back quite a long way.
Yes.
They were moved, those stones, or it was lying on the ground, they'd been re-erected. I think they're new ones and they've been re-erected.
So were they actually buried there?
I don't know. No. That I wouldn't know.
Might just be a memorial.
Yes, I'm not quite sure. Yeah. It might say so on them, I don't know.
I mean, is that a place where people can go now? Is there access?
I've tried to think. Because a lot of the old woodlands just along beyond the dam have been fenced and replanted. I think you can get in there because the gates aren't locked. And no one will mind. I mean, that's what they're there for, I suppose, so people can read them. And there's also a connection with the giant's gravestones that are in the churchyard at Penrith.
Right.
I'm not quite sure what that is, but... That's a bit of local history.
Right. What about the houses here at Naddlegate? Do you know what the connection is between Glenbanks and these houses?
Johnny Idle's a man to talk to about that, really, but they were, I presume they were built for the managers, the sort of white-collar people who turned up. And over the years, I know that Sid Weir, who was not the previous reservoir keeper, but the one prior to that, he lived next door here on the end. Johnny lived in this one.
That would have been number six, that would have been number eight
and Ron Harrison and Barbara, they lived in number five they lived in this one, I think
number seven
at various times. I think because the depot had various workers in it, there's a blacksmith's forge, a paint shop and a woodworking shop, and they were all employees of Manchester Corporation and then North West Water, and various of them lived either in the village or in here on Naddlegate. But these were sold off as private houses quite a long time ago now. This may have been the last one to go, actually, which would have been in about 1988. Yeah. The one in the corner might have gone after that. Anyway, but when I came here, there was no community institutions left. Everything had gone. There was just the houses, nothing else.
Yes, the buildings were dismantled and often re-erected elsewhere for further use,
I believe so, yeah, some of them, yeah. Yeah. Looking at the some of the ones that came down this time, that wouldn't have been an option. Well, having said that, we salvaged quite a lot of the wood, particularly from the oaks, which was very dry. It's Canadian spruce.
Mm-hmm.
It actually said on it what it was.
It's so
a redwood, yeah. Stamped. Some of it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. It absolutely bone dry. The stuff that came out of the oaks was.
Mm-hmm.
And no woodworm in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And today you probably can't buy it because it's just not logged in. Well, it is, but it would be environmentally unsound. but we've actually used it to build ploshes in the tree nursery. Salvage as much as we can. The oaks was the best. The stuff that came out of the one nearest the dam was a lot wetter and full of woodworm, for whatever reason.
Do you think that was due to the state of the roof?
Possibly, yeah. It could well have been,
Did you see anything else interesting about the structure of the houses as they were being taken down?
Not really, I don't think, no. They were obviously quite substantial for temporary buildings. There was a lot of brick in them,
right.
in the chimney breasts and what have you. But they really, there's very little foundation really. They were just built on concrete slabs, and some of it wasn't even concrete. It was just wood, by the looks of it, I think. But no, it's pretty much what I expected. Yeah. There's a lot of cast iron that came out of them.
Well, that was the idea, I guess, wasn't it? They were planning to sell it all now.
Do you actually know where some of the other ones have gone?
I can look it up because Sylvia said in her interview where some of the public buildings went.
All right.
They went off to be village halls in various different places.
Did they? Yeah. I know the house that was been for sale at Shap Granite Works there. I don't know if you just at the foot of Shap on the A6 there.
Right.
That looks suspiciously like one of those. I don't know whether it came from there.
Mm-hmm.
But that did look very much like one of these.
But there was a similar, slightly similar village over there, wasn't there? I think it was
there?
Possibly earlier, yes.
There was a
purpose-built village, of which there's not a trace now. But
yeah, I didn't know that.
Yes.
All right. Yeah.
So it might be connected with that.
It might, yeah. It could be, yeah. Mm. Yeah. There's also some very similar-looking buildings in Long Sladdle as well. Excuse me. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can't think of anything else. I think that's...
No, I can't off the top of my head. I did collect press cuttings and things for a little while. I should have brought them down. I've got them in an album. I was a bit in a rush this morning. I'll dig them out and drop them off for you sometime.
That'd be excellent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got some old pictures of the house when we first moved into it.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks very much, Dave.
That's okay.